Welcome to the Design the Future podcast, where we talk with women leading the way towards a better built world. Design the Future is hosted by me, Lindsay Baker, with Kira Gould. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Design the Future podcast. It's good to be with you. This is Lindsay.
And this is Kira.
And yeah, we are miles away, Kira. You had snow, right? That happened?
Yes, we've had so much snow in the Kansas City area, snow and ice and inclement weather of all sorts. We've had five inclement weather days since the kids have been back in school.
Oh man, yeah. How does your son feel about like the concept of a snow day? This is new.
He loves it. Are you kidding?
That's good.
He's loving it. Oh, it's all good. But yeah, it's been fun. I've been enjoying winter in a way that I haven't for, 15 years in California. It's been fun.
Good. Well, yeah, we are having our own classic. I don't know if it's classic, arguably, but it's a winter out here in the sense that there has been so much rain. Obviously, Kira, you got to take part in some of this because Kira and I got to see each other in person for a little bit.
Yes. That was lovely.
But yeah, very rainy out here on the West Coast. So for better or for worse, it feels like hibernation season.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah. For sure.
And yeah, I actually have to say, and Kira, you know this, but I want to advocate for other people doing this thing that I did last week. I decided to have a week where I didn't email and I didn't take meetings, but it wasn't a vacation. I sat around and I read reports and books and things related to our movement. And then I sort of started working on some writing that I'm going to do this year and in the coming years, I guess. So like, yeah, reading writing week. It was very good, like wintry activity to do that. And I feel great. I think we are all looking for some liberation sometimes from email and meetings, and Lord knows I have that problem. So just wanted to say,
I think it's great that you did that, Lindsay. And it's very inspiring to me. I've been trying to think about how I can emulate that in some fashion, especially stringing together the days like that so that you have time. I think there's something about having time to read and then sort of steep in things and think about them rather than just read, react, move on, read, react, move on. There's this pace that daily life puts us into. And I don't know. I think it's great.
Yeah. I think we're all coming to learn more about the science of how our brains work. Right. And so some of it is like just being comfortable saying that it's really hard to read a chapter of a book and then immediately move into like, whatever, making dinner or dealing with, like, there's our brains need a different type of buffer space around some of these kinds of things.
Yep.
Sure. And I know it was a great privilege, obviously, that I got to do this. And, as listeners know, I do not have children and I can imagine that being a lot harder if I did, but like, still, it felt like a really, I don't know, just how else are we all supposed to get through this kind of this aspect of our work for those of us that have that there. So
Yeah, no, I think it's important, especially in the context of, so much of this movement is trying to synthesize so much information and also all these different moving parts and sort of related efforts and also manage the cognitive dissonance and all the things. I mean, it's a lot, right? So just taking time and letting your brain have the time to do that seems really smart. Really intentional. I love it.
Yeah. Thanks. And I mean, I will say for those of you listening, you are probably doing that thing right now. So good for you taking some time to learn something through having us bring somebody in. And yeah, I hope that some of my reading and just taking things in, listening otherwise, will help make it easier for everybody that is listening to learn more through the act of just tuning in for the pod. So I don't know, maybe with that, we should transition to
absolutely.
Let's all learn something. I am so excited for our guest for today. We have Nuri Rajvanshi with us from Siemens. Welcome, Nuri.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And it's so funny and it's so great that you say that about, the quiet time. I really, really appreciate it. Sometimes you feel inadequate right, about having to multitask and doing million things at a time. Quiet reflective time, taking that, I think it's really, really great.
Yeah, this was an act of trying to really reserve it for myself. My partner always makes fun of me for multitasking. Probably most people listening right now are doing something like walking a dog or cleaning their house or whatever. So I hope we are creating space for us all to do the best we can. So with that, I'm excited to introduce you all to Nuri if you don't know her. Nuri Rajvanshi is Director of Sustainability and Climate Strategy at Siemens USA, with more than a decade of experience in the field of environmental, sustainability, energy, and urban development. She is currently responsible for supporting the strategy and execution of the Siemens US region's decarbonization plan to achieve net zero operations by 2030. No big deal. Some of our listeners might have heard of Nuri in relation to the best-selling book Drawdown. The work that was done there, she participated in that as a research fellow with Project Drawdown, and her work was foundational to three of the chapters in the book. So we'll talk a little bit about that, I think. But before we get to that, Nuri, can you just start off by telling us a little bit about you? How and why did you get involved in environmental sustainability and urban development, and just what's been your path?
Yeah, happy to. Thanks again for having me. So I have listened to some of your previous episodes of your podcast, and a lot of folks start later on in career, but I want to start really, really early. I was actually even before I was born. My family, I'm from India, and that's where my family is based, and my family has a very rich history of being pioneers, researchers, thinkers, social reformers for a very long time. My grandfather from my father's side was in the freedom fight during India's independence struggle. And from my mother's side, they were social reformers in the field of women's education and welfare, early 1900s. So there is a very rich history there. And I was basically born into a family that really gave a lot of importance to research and education and just overall sustainable development. So the emphasis on, you know, how continuous learning is important to research and growth has been always part of my family. And all of the principles of sustainable living that we hear right now about farm to table, reducing energy consumption at home, or reducing waste, all of those we practiced growing up, right? So that is inculcated into me and my sister's upbringing. And I think that's what we carried in our careers. So you can think of it as sustainability as a family legacy or family business. And as I was growing up, I was very influenced by my father, who is a mechanical engineer, and he worked a lot on solar energy in late 1970s. I decided to pursue mechanical engineering with this intent that I want to do something in renewable energy. My first job right out of undergrad in India was in a large diesel engine manufacturing company called Cummins. It's an American company, but they had a manufacturing facility in India where I actually worked on the shop floor, building and assembling large engines and their parts. And I learned a lot, not just from technical point of view, but it was a great learning experience from a cultural point of view also, because I was maybe only one of a handful of women on the shop floor, this very large manufacturing facility. So just being in that environment and being where I am right now in a sustainability field, where I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by women, was a totally different experience. And then afterwards, where I really started into the sustainability world was when I came to University of Florida for my graduate school. And the plan was originally to literally follow in my father's footsteps and work in solar energy research. But things happened. My advisor at that time got an offer from another university, and I was fortunate enough to get NSF funding to work in interdisciplinary research focused on water. And during one of the classes that I had to take for this fellowship, I learned about this method called life cycle assessment. And my very data-driven, technical-minded brain really latched onto this concept of LCAs, thinking that I can quantify environmental impacts of something was really fascinating for me. And then that's where I basically decided to focus my career and my PhD research. And then when I saw this opportunity at Siemens, which is advertised as sustainable life cycle engineer, it felt like the description was written for me. And that's how I basically ended up at Siemens. And I've held many different jobs since then, but that's how I got involved in this sustainability in the corporate world. So sorry, very long.
No, that's great. I love that story. What a fantastic, I love the family connections too. My father is an architect and he was involved in solar, residential solar in the 70s. And I often think that must be like the seed was planted before I was, you know, really conversant in these things. But that's a great story, Nori. Thank you so much for sharing it. I wondered if you could just tell us a little bit about what you think people should know about entering this profession. And I know you said you have multiple roles at Siemens, and we can talk more about that in a minute, but just generally, what should they be good at? What should they be interested in?
Yeah, this is something in recent years, I've started talking and writing about this topic because I always felt that there was no one right path to pursue a career in sustainability, be it, you know, if you want to go into academia or corporate career or research. I have had sort of a traditional education in sustainability, but most folks who work in sustainability now have not. And just about the right attitude and passion sometimes is what you need, but you also need a lot of other skills that don't necessarily come from a formal sustainability education. So usually the best advice I can offer to mentors or teachers is to help young students understand that there are many possible paths and educate them on, you know, how to recognize these paths if they're truly interested in the in a sustainability or environmental career. So, you know, if you're passionate in computer science and coding, there is still a path to sustainability, right? In Siemens, we say that there is like 6 degrees or even less separation between any job and our sustainability targets, right? So everybody who is doing work within Siemens has one way or other contributed to sustainability. And over a decade in this field, I've also learned that you have to have an open mind, right? The right attitude and a desire and ability to learn is very important. And I recently heard somebody say that learning to learn is the new skill that you need to acquire in this field.
I love that. That makes a lot of sense to me. And it's also very interesting because I think we hear a lot, you know, it's been quoted a variety of ways, but basically saying that all jobs are sustainability jobs in one way or another, which is a little bit of what you're talking about with that degrees of separation. But so that we understand a little more, maybe you could talk about a little bit more about Siemens as an organization, scope, scale, purpose, things like that, and your role, the role or multiple roles, I guess, that you've held there.
Sure, happy to. So Siemens is huge. We are about 300,000 employees in almost every single country in the world. I think the last I heard it was over 190 countries. And most folks might know us as a big engineering giant, manufacturing company. But in recent years, we are also becoming a big superpower in virtual world, so digital world. And our superpower is combining the real world that we had a real expertise in past and the digital world, which we are slowly entering into. So over years, we have transformed from purely manufacturing company to a company that can help customers accelerate their own digital transformation. And then we are also showing this through examples in our own operations, how we are doing this for ourselves that we can replicate for our customers. So in our main industrial businesses are smart infrastructure, which basically focuses on built space, energy systems. That business unit also looks at electric charging infrastructure, Second business unit is Digital Industries, which focuses on software and hardware solutions for our industrial customers. So a lot of work that we do for manufacturing industry. And finally, Mobility business unit that is focused on mainly rail transportation and solutions around rail industries. So you can see we cover a lot of breadth in terms of what we offer. And the interesting thing is also that as we map our portfolio, we have been able to figure out or determine that about 90% or maybe even higher than 90% of our business enables customers to achieve a positive sustainability impact, right? So directly or indirectly, the products that we sell help our customers with sustainability, their sustainability targets and goals. And my own journey within Siemens, I started, as I mentioned in for the previous question, that I started as a LCA engineer in our R&D department. So a lot of work I did was looking at new innovations that Siemens was getting into with our external partners and looking at the environmental and economic impacts of these products and solutions. But since then, I have taken a few different responsibilities, and I can talk about that in a little bit. But right now, what I do is I work in our corporate sustainability office for Siemens US region and lead our climate strategy work. So this means that I work with our local businesses here to execute on our net zero strategy. So Siemens has a company-wide goal to be net zero in our own operations by 2030. And how do we achieve this is, you know, part of my job, especially in the US region. So what does it mean to be net zero? Does it mean to have a 100% electric fleet of vehicles, all our buildings to be net zero, all our manufacturing footprint to be net zero, all our electricity to come from renewables? And the answer is yes to all of that. But then actually making that happen here is part of my role.
That's amazing. And that's just part of your job, that small thing that you just described. Crazy. Could you say a little bit about what you're most proud of accomplishing in your work life, Nori?
Yeah, of course. I feel a little old now. I've been at Siemens for maybe, 12 years, a little over 12 years already. And as I mentioned, and right now my role is in corporate sustainability, but I did a lot of different projects before that. One of the work was with our urban development team. So that is a project that I spent about 3 or 4 years of my Siemens career on, and I think achieved the most. I'm pretty proud of the work that I did there. And so at Siemens, we had an urban development team, which did a lot of work with cities around the world. And around 2014, 2015, we saw a need within cities or some of the more progressive cities that were already setting ambitious greenhouse gas reduction goals. And they needed help in figuring out how to get to these goals. So maybe they had already set goals or they were thinking about setting goals. Most popular goal at that time was 80 by 50. So 80% reduction as compared to their baseline by 2050. And as they were starting to put together their climate action plan, we decided to develop an in-house tool called City Performance Tool to look at over 70 different technologies and levers that can help cities get to their goals. And then as we were developing this tool, we discovered that it can do more than just create a climate action plan. Sometimes it can even give external validation to the cities. It can help them set their GHG goals. And we also knew that the cities and mayor's offices especially were motivated not just by carbon, but also by the employment that this would generate. So impact of these levers on economy. And one part of the tool that also was also quantifying things like the local jobs that would be created if they actually implemented this climate action plan, and improvement in air quality, not just reduction in GHG emission. That was something that would help them tell a story within the city on, you know, why implementing this climate action plan is essential. And at that time when we started, we were one of the very few players in this space. And now I know there are a lot of tools like this in the market already, but at that time there wasn't as much. And globally, using this tool, we worked with 45 cities worldwide. I personally was involved in 15 cities in North America. And the good thing, maybe a unique thing for a company like Siemens to work in this space, was we were offering this analysis and the tool and the consulting that came with this tool free of cost to cities at that time, saying that, you know, we want to help you figure out how you can get to your goal using technologies. And finally, implementation is your responsibility and we can help, but, you know, we can at least give you actionable plan that you can take forward. So yeah, I mean, that was pretty impressive work that we did, and I'm really proud of that, what we achieved using that. And we published almost every city that we worked with published a report, and we made it public, easily available to anybody who wants to see it, that what work went behind it.
That's super cool. Oh man, even just the city's scale, it's always baggling to me. But yeah, I love hearing that. Well, okay, I know we also, let's see, I want to know if there's a project that you're working on now that you want listeners to know about. And is it also like, yeah, so tell us about that. And I don't know, maybe I still want to know if there's anything else that you wanted to add about Drawdown, but maybe start like what's going on now.
Sure, I can talk about something that I'm working on, just very, very new and very, very recent. So it's definitely nothing that we can publish about this yet. But I have been working in this corporate sustainability field for last 3 or 4 years. And then one thing that I've learned over my time is that I'm very fortunate to work in Siemens because we have visionary leadership at the highest level who have said that, you know, let's set these really ambitious, well-intentioned targets. But then when it comes to execution, all the work comes to regional business units, right? So how do we find money to do this kind of work? Do we do it with carrots and sticks? And, you know, who pays for it, etc.? That all depends on the regional, at regional level. And one of the sticks in the carrots and sticks is carbon pricing, right? So this is a topic that is not new. It has been successfully implemented by some businesses and some companies and not by others. But we are a huge company, so setting a company-wide carbon price is quite difficult. We have so many operating companies within so many regions that it doesn't seem possible to do that. But I mean, don't get me wrong, that many companies have done it on a global level, but we prefer to approach it on a regional basis. So for example, my colleagues in Siemens UK have had internal carbon price for several years already, and major portion of the proceeds are going to expand the EV charging infrastructure they're putting for their office locations. Same with Siemens Brazil. They started with a carbon price, and then they moved to shadow price. And what shadow price is, if you don't know, is essentially a theoretical carbon price that's applied to business decisions. So if a company had to do a big CapEx investment, big capital investment within a country, and had to make a decision about buying equipment that would be using natural gas, they would have to apply a carbon shadow price to calculate what would be the additional cost of phasing out this natural gas usage over years, right? And that's basically helping them make the right decision right now to invest in a capital project that will not have a phase out cost in years to come. Right. So this is basically to provide some kind of transparency in decision-making process, and especially in US, where Siemens is really expanding our manufacturing footprint. we feel that this should be included in our decision-making process, right? So I am currently working to put together a proposal on how we will implement this within our company and if it's the right thing for us to consider. So a lot of politics and logistics and not the most exciting parts of the process. I have to go behind it before it actually becomes a reality and we can talk about it.
I mean, that's the work, right? Like I'm sure some of it doesn't sound that exciting, but yeah, that's I think that sounds really exciting. And I had never heard the distinction between carbon pricing and shadow pricing. So thank you for that. That's super cool. Well, okay, there's a lot more we could talk about there, but I am kind of curious, like you highlighted this as you were saying how this all works, whether it's in Brazil or in the UK or otherwise. And I'm just wondering if you can share with us a little bit about what you've learned around how to engage with all of these different, such a large group and such a diverse group of stakeholders in a big organization like Siemens. Like what are your tactics that you're using to try to figure out how to resonate with so many people?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And it's, you know, as I was talking about shadow pricing, I'm sure it was getting more and more apparent to you that, which I hadn't realized when I first took the job, but a good portion of my job is spent in stakeholder management. And then stakeholders could be internal or external. And when I say internal stakeholders, it's not just the leadership teams, right? Like, of course, I have to go to the leadership team for money, for approvals and project to get, you know, green lights on certain things that we want to do. But it also means our employees and my coworkers, right? We are, within the company, we are focusing a lot of effort in education. I mean, as I said, we are like Siemens is 300,000 people worldwide. So, and in US, we are about 60,000 folks. So it's a huge community. And we want to make sure that everybody understands why we are doing this, why we have our degree framework, why we are investing in decarbonization efforts, why we are building our factories this way, and why do we have this 2030 goal. So we do have a few web-based trainings for all our employees. But beyond that, we are also focusing on deep dives, right? So we don't want to say that, you know, the work is being done with this like small group somewhere, right? But we want to educate all our employees on nuances of this work, right? There might be some interest. It might not have the widest audience, but there is still some interest. We have a lot of engineers who want to know how things work, how things are getting done. And the invitation is open to anybody who is interested to hear all the work that goes beyond that one single carbon number that we publish end of the year, every year, right? So everything that goes into that. And then we were surprised when a lot of our business development and customer account manager employees started showing up to our deep dives, because our customers are asking the same kinds of questions and are battling with the same challenges that we are. So, you know, that was a surprising discovery for us, that we need to have this wide and deep, both wide and deep education available for our employees. So, you know, stakeholder management at a leadership level, that's part of the job, that's part of a project manager and program manager. But this employee education, I think, is also really, really important part of what we do here.
Fascinating. Really, really interesting. It's such a large organization. I think some of us, it's a little hard for some of us to understand what all is involved there. I want to shift gears just a little bit and sort of zoom out. The sustainability field or fields broadly are often thought of or referred to as a movement. And I'm just wondering, do you feel like you're part of an industry or a movement, or how do you think about those things for yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I guess before I came into corporate sustainability, I wouldn't have really characterized myself as part of the movement, but I feel like I am now. When I joined Siemens 12 years ago, it was only maybe one of handful people within the company that had sustainability in their title or even job description. And that has changed drastically now. And I'm really happy about it. Like, I go to different conferences and the venues need to start changing because suddenly they have to accommodate like five times as many people they had in like since last 5 years. So I'm encouraged to see that I cannot count the number of sustainability professionals within the company on my hands or toes together. So I definitely feel part of the movement, and a movement that is not as exclusive anymore. And even though some folks might feel that that's a bad thing, it's not exclusive anymore, everybody is a sustainability professional, I feel like that's the dream, right? That's the goal that we are working towards, to make sure this is mainstream, right? We are not doing sustainability as an additional thing. It's part of our everyday work. Like, we are making decisions related to design based on sustainability, not just adding it on later on, or material choices and all of those things. So I feel that's where we have to go now.
Yeah, that's great. I love that framing of it. Well, as someone who has been, you know, a part of this movement / industry for some time, where did you think we would be in the 2020s?
Yeah, I guess in graduate school, I never really thought a lot about corporate sustainability because it was not a career choice at that time, right? There were not enough corporate sustainability jobs that's where you will go. But now, as I'm in the middle of this movement, I feel like corporations have a big role to play. And I am a climate optimist. So I always felt out of grad school that, you know, you have to invest in sustainability because it's the right thing to do, not because, you know, regulations are forcing you to, or investors are forcing you to. That's not the most ideal scenario. And I still feel that, but now I'm a little bit realist also. And I feel that whatever is the reason that we are investing in sustainability, I would take it. And in an ideal world, everyone will come to the same conclusion that we have to do it because we need to, and not because some regulations and investors are forcing us to. But I'm still grateful for all of the regulatory and investor pressure that is being applied right now. So I don't know if that's what I envisioned it would be in 2020, but I'm hopeful that whatever are the pressures are making us all move in the right direction and faster in that direction.
Yeah, it does really feel that way. And I appreciate what you're saying about sort of how, yeah, investor pressure. I mean, basically, I think it's always been useful for me to remember and to share with others that regardless of which position we take on in this movement, and I, you know, feel that way too, that that's what we're in. We all are kind of playing off the stakeholders around us. And so investor pressure is something that, yeah, folks like us want, rightfully, because it's just, it's our friends coming at it from a different angle, increasing the demand for the thing that we are supplying, I guess, one way of putting it. But so then last question about this sort of question of how we're doing. Are there areas where you think we've made a lot of progress that you're proud of, how far we've come in the world of sustainability? And then are there maybe a couple of areas where you think we need to focus more of our attention to make more progress?
Yeah, I feel being in a technology company, I really feel that we have made a lot of progress in technological innovation. Right, everybody kept on talking about the cost of renewables, which, you know, is a problem that feels like it's solved now, and that's what's making energy transition possible. And as I was talking about the whole intersection between digital and real world, the simulation digital twin is also a field where I think we are making huge progress because of our. And because of the advances in AI, we are able to, you know, build factories in a digital world and make millions of iterations that we wouldn't have been able to previously. And because of that, our speed is increasing and sustainability is increasing, waste is reducing, things like that. So I'm encouraged by that a lot. I'm not an expert in climate finance, but that feels like another area where I see some encouraging progress. And I guess one topic that I feel, especially being in corporate sustainability, I feel like we need to get our act together is this whole reporting topic. Feels like a lot of corporate teams are spending way too much time, way too much effort and resources on thousands of different agencies that are asking for information. There has to be an easier way. I don't have answers to everything, but large companies like Siemens have teams of 20 or more people focused just on reporting. And I fully agree that we do need this transparency, especially in the whole age of what investors are asking for. There has to be some consistency in what we are reporting, etc. And upcoming regulations, we need reporting for that. But it just feels like we have the tools to make it easier for all, especially smaller companies that don't have this manpower or resources behind this. There has to be some standardization. And again, my personal opinion in this from what I've seen.
Yeah, no, I think that's such an important point. Oh gosh, we could have a whole, oh, Kira, that would be a good candidate for us to have like almost a panel discussion about because yeah, just the degree to which, I mean, I've seen companies that hire corporate sustainability teams whose primary function is just to report, you know, which is just like not what any of us signed up for, but because it's so onerous, you basically, it's a Sisyphean task, right? Like you basically you finish your report and then you immediately have to go start working on data collection for the next year's report.
That's, exactly.
Yeah, no, totally. That is a big one. Thank you for that.
I know it's not the sexiest topic to discuss, but it just feels like we can do better.
No, we can do better and we have to. And yeah, once we get all that down, we can do the sexier things. So thank you for that. Well, okay, so we are almost out of time, Nori, and we want to make sure to ask you our last question that we love to hear from people on. So in wrapping up, can you please tell us a little bit about who you are most inspired by these days in terms of leaders of any kind?
So I thought about this question a little bit, and I feel like I am, it's not leaders per se, but I'm most inspired by people who have to change their jobs to do more of what's coming because of the sustainability movement. Right? As an example, electricians who are now installing heat pumps are installing EV chargers. And I feel like we need to give them more credit and give them more visibility. They are the ones who are doing all of the work that is behind. And we need those skill sets, right? We need them to continue teaching the next generations of electricians and to do all of the work that we are talking about here that needs to get done by whatever 2030, 2050. So that I've been thinking
about. I love that. That sounds sort of like a thing that I say sometimes. Like I got to have a meeting. I got to give a talk to a bunch of energy managers, and I basically was like, "You guys are the heroes." So to electricians for all of the like hands-on actual doing of this stuff. I totally love that. Well, thank you, Nori. That is a wonderful way to wrap up and to just give some positive energy out there in the world to all of the folks who are, who we need. We need more people in those roles, and to everyone that is on that career path. We love you. Thanks, Nori, for joining. It's been so great to have you. Really appreciate hearing your perspective about everything you were doing in that incredibly big organization. I hope it's been elucidating for everyone just to hear about like how it all works under the hood for a huge place like Siemens. So thanks, Nori.
Thanks so much.
And thank you, Kira. Stay warm out there.
Thank you.
And that goes for all of us. Thank you all for joining. I hope that you stay warm. That is it for us this week on the Design the Future podcast. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Please leave us a review on Apple. It really matters. It helps people find us. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.